Based on hundreds of millions of real-world tests, the experts at Ookla Speedtest have spoken. T-Mobile is now the best mobile network in America. So you can keep up with all the MLB action from the ballpark to the backcountry because they've got the most advanced 5G, the most towers, and a signal that goes farther than ever. Oh, and did I mention the largest satellite-to-mobile network? They're way ahead making sure that the fans experience every pitch, play, and post-game moment. So whether you're streaming the game out and about, checking stats on the road, or experiencing ballpark perks with Magenta status, you're ready to stay connected wherever your fandom takes you. Head over to T-Mobile.com/network to switch to the best network. For baseball fans, it's better over here. Based on analysis by Ookla of Speedtest Intelligence, data first half 2025, compatible device and plan required for T-Satellite. See details at T-Mobile.com.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting six crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus four biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Welcome to The Tool Shed, a podcast covering all aspects of fantasy baseball to help you win all of your fantasy leagues. From the MLB draft all the way to the show, we're here to help give you the edge in your dynasty leagues. Now, here are your hosts, Eric Cross and Chris Clegg.
Welcome into another episode of The Tool Shed with Clegg and Cross, brought to you by Rotoballer. This is episode 336. Thank you for joining us. I'm your host, Eric Cross. And with me, as usual, is my 80 grade co-host, Mr. Chris Clay. Chris, how's it going, bud?
It's going good. I'm glad to be back for another good show. And I think this is going to be a good one as we talk some rookie standouts. A lot of debuts. I would be curious to go back and look at how many debuts we've had this year of prospects versus other years, because it does feel like a lot. And honestly, I feel like the war accumulation of this rookie class has also been pretty good across the board. There hasn't been like the super duper elite season, but I still think it's been pretty good, honestly. So I've been pretty pleased with a lot of the rookies this year.
Yeah, if you look at the war of rookies right now, we have, so for ones that are over 2.5, we have 9. We have 13 over 1.5, and that doesn't even include some of the bigger names that are still trying to get there, like James Wood, Wyatt Langford's at 1.4 war, and a lot of names that you wouldn't have expected. Oh, David Hamilton's up there, and Tyler Fitzgerald. So it's been a good little mix. You get some of the bigger names doing well, some that aren't, some pop-ups. Been a really fun year, and we talked a few rookies last week, but there's just so many more to talk about that are intriguing, that are either debuted recently or just doing well this year. We figure we'd talk about a lot more rookies. We got, I don't know, been the vicinity of a dozen on the list today. But before we get into all of them, the usual housekeeping. You can find us on Twitter. Chris is at RotoClegg. I'm at EricCross04. Show is at ToolShedPod. If you enjoy the pod, please rate and review. Make sure you check out both of our personal platforms, TheDynastyDugout.com and ToolShedFantasy.com for more work from each of us. That's also where all of our rankings live, Dynasty, Prospect, FYPD, plus a lot more. And, of course, check out all the great things going on over at Rotoballer. Yeah, the MLB season's winding down, but we still got a lot of great fantasy baseball content over there. Plenty of fantasy football, obviously, plus so much more. Use the code TOOLSHED at checkout. Gets you 10% off any premium package over at rotoballer.com. Let's start out with one of the front runners for the National League Rookie of the Year. Maybe a three-horse race, but really a two-horse race between Paul Skeens and this guy, Jackson Merrill. I put out a tweet earlier today on, this is recording Thursday night, just looking at Jackson Merrill's stats across the board. And I found that Merrill is, well, as of now, obviously a few weeks left, so this could change, but as of now, Merrill is one of just 6 rookies in Major League history to have 20, at least 20 home runs, 15 steals, 80 RBI, an average over 290, and a slug over 500 as a rookie. The other five are Orlando Cepeda way back in, I believe it was 1958, Nomar in the late 90s, Ryan Braun in 07, and then Yoenis Cespedes and Mike Trout in 2012. So hasn't been done in 12 years and only been done five times ever. And Merrill, as long as he keeps the average and slug above those thresholds, will be the sixth one ever. Chris, Merrill, I mean, obviously I'm not saying his season's flying under the radar because it's not, but I feel like he doesn't still gets a little undervalued, and I'm definitely guilty of that as well. I have not ranked him as high as I should have. I'm correcting that now, but he's just really good across the board. Doesn't have that any category that he truly stands out or wows you in, and that those guys usually do get slightly undervalued. But again, he could put up a 25-20 season, get up 80 runs, 90 RBI, hit close to 300. Doesn't walk a lot, but doesn't strike out a lot either. Quality of contact's good. There's a lot of good things here in this profile. Where do you feel like is an appropriate spot to rank him now? Do you think he's top 25 for Dynasty at this point?
Maybe not, but he might should be, which is contradictory to say. It's hard to go that high on him, but yet he's done kind of everything that you want to see. And in terms of like best like rookie seasons, it's not like elite. You mentioned the 25-20 thing, and he'd be one of few that's actually done that as a rookie. I had looked it up earlier. I'm pulling it back up. Since the start of 2000, looking at rookies that had hit 25 home runs, which I think is pretty realistic, and stolen 20 bases, which I think he needs two more. Is he at 18?
He's at 60. So he would need three more home runs and four more steals.
Okay. So it's not unreasonable to think that he could do that. We've got three more weeks of the season. So when you look at those, pulling it up right now, that have done 25 home runs, 20 stolen bases as a rookie, the list is pretty small. It's Chris Young, and this is since 2000, by the way. Chris Young in 07, Mike Trout in 2012, Julio Rodriguez in 2022, and then Corbin Carroll last year in 2023. Pretty elusive group to join there if he were to complete this. And yeah, I think you're right that Merrill's been pretty stellar, and he's gotten better throughout the year. Put up 4.5 WAR to this point, which is good. And guess what? He's doing this all while playing a new position. Like, he's playing center field. He was a shortstop. And so to see him take on this position and also dominate at the plate, I think speaks a lot about the kind of player that we're looking at here. And Jackson Merrill, and I mentioned it, I wanted to filter back and see, like, when did this, like, kind of hot stretch start? And then, like you say, he's been good all year. But to begin the year, it was just okay. And that was to be expected. Yeah. He was a 20-year-old. I went back to April, or May the 12th randomly, just because he had a three-hit game on May the 12th. So since May the 12th, it's a 304 average, just a 328 OBP. So he's not getting on base a ton, but 552 slug. 20 of those home runs have come since May the 12th. So he's really picked it up. I think he's gotten better all year. Again, you look at the age, you look at the fact that he started the year as a 20-year-old in the majors, and he was playing a new position, and hard to argue against what he's done. The contact skills are elite. He hits the ball at ideal angles very often. He's barreling it up. He's hitting the ball hard. I think I'm pretty in here on Jackson Merrill.
Yeah, I have him definitely top 40 right now. Top 25 is so hard. Now you're getting into, you know, you're getting into the Trey Turner, Francisco Lindor range. And yeah, he's obviously much younger than those guys, but it's just, is he worthy of top 25? Yes. There's other people, you know, you can only leapfrog so many guys, and you only can put 25 guys in your top 25, even though I want to put 30 or 40 in there. But yeah, for instance, in my 20, so let me go over the right tab here. Yeah, so looking at, for me, J-Rod is at 20 right now. You got Trey Turner, Corey Seager, Royce Lewis. This is a really hard area to get into. But hey, he's definitely performing. He should be bare minimum top 50. And yeah, right now I currently have him at 33. But he's continued to inch up every rankings update. I move him up another 25, 30 spots. And yeah, like I said, and there's no real red flag. Yeah, okay, the chase rate's a bit high, sure. Chase rate's at 35.7%, doesn't walk a lot. But at the same time, contact rates, both in zone and overall, are above average by about 4 to 4.5%. First, he swings a lot in the first pitch, but he does a lot of damage on the first pitch as well. So yeah, he's aggressive, but has the contact skills to back it up. Doesn't strike out much at all. 17.5% there. Above average quality of contact. Solid runner. 81st percentile sprint speed. I was thinking about this earlier that I remember last offseason, there was a decent debate going between, you know, who would be better between Jackson Merrill and Colson Montgomery. And that's been blown wide open, you know, over the last 7-8 months or so, with Merrill doing what he's doing. Montgomery's kind of struggled this year in the minor leagues. But yeah, Merrill just seems like a well-rounded potential 25-20 guy that can give you a bunch of runs, RBI, and hit for high average. Maybe a little bit lower in OBP formats because of that low walk rate, but yeah, I'm nitpicking at this point. Another guy here, Colton Cowser, one of the AL Rookie of the Year frontrunners right now, and that's a wide-open race over in that league. But Cowser's been, you know, steadily pretty good. The metrics are more all over the place than with Jackson Merrill, but Cowser still has 20 home runs and 8 steals in 484 plate appearances. So maybe an outside shot like a 25-10 season if he hit some home runs down the stretch. And that's something, even when we were talking with Eric Garfield, who covers the lower level, really all levels, but especially the lower levels of the Baltimore Orioles farm system, probably more than anybody you'll find out there. He was talking about how he's like, hey, Couser's power's legit. And yep, he was absolutely right. And you look at quality of contact, 14% barrel, 90.6 average exit velocity, 47% hard hit rate. The walk rate's always been pretty solid. He's 9.3% there. However, K rate's 30.5%. Zone contact actually is higher than I thought it was. I think it's actually ticked up recently. So I swear it was like 75% or so. He's at 78.9 right now. Overall is right below 70. So these aren't terrible. They're not great, obviously. They're below average, but not terrible. Chase rate's better than league average. Probably going to be a guy that's in that 250-ish range, give or take, every year. But if that comes with 25-10, decent amount of runs in RBI, being in that Baltimore lineup, I think this is a guy that's going to be in that back-end top 100 or just around the top 100 overall debate, and not quite as good overall as Merrill, obviously, but still plenty of value to be had here with Cowser. So, yeah, I like him as a top 100 guy for sure.
Yeah, his season's been really up and down. But at the end of the day, you look back and it's been a really good season. He's gone through stretches where he didn't feel startable. But if you weathered it, you look back and 20 home runs later and he has 8 stolen bases. I think that's what you're expecting. Like, it's 484 plate appearances we're looking at. So, you know, 25 home run pop, 10 stolen bases. Like, it's a pretty valuable player, especially in an OBP league. I think he's going to play up a little more. Doesn't chase very often. He's taking his walks. Sure, he struck out a little bit too much. The swing and miss is concerning, but Cowser is still a really solid player. 24 years old, rookie. To step into a contending team at that and to have this kind of season, I think, speaks a lot of volume. And so I think that you look and it's probably a good buying opportunity on Cowser still in Dynasty. Yep. Because it seems to me that the perceived value isn't quite all there, even though he's been good. So I think people can nitpick. We can pick holes in Cowser's game for sure, but outside the inconsistencies, he's been solid all season. So I'm definitely buying into Cowser. Is he like a stud? Is he going to be a superstar? No, but is he potential like top 100 dynasty asset long-term? Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, he's a guy that would be absolutely maddening to roster in a head-to-head league. In some weeks, he could be one of your best players and maybe win you a category that week. And then he's, like you mentioned, there would be a couple weeks where he's just not startable and you're debating dropping him. And you know, he can have a week where he's 2-for-29 or whatever it is and really hurt you that week. So, yeah, definitely more of a roto type of player. But, yeah, like I said, end of the season, if you're getting 25-10, around 250, decent amount of runs in RBI, I think you'll be, you know, probably pretty happy with your investment there for sure. Keep it in the AL East. Go over to my Red Sox here with Willier Abreu, who, you know, quietly has had a pretty decent season. with the Red Sox and 377 plate appearances, 267, 332, 493 slash with 14 home runs and seven steals. You know, one of the better overall rookies this year. Probably will finish like top five in AL Rookie of the Year voting. Maybe even top three. You know, again, that race is pretty wide open. I guess like the real question with Abreu is, outside of how good can he be long term, obviously, is where does he fit in? What does this Red Sox team look like next year? Because right now, the outfield for the most part has been Duran, Willier Abreu, and Tyler O'Neill. O'Neill is free agent after this year, so let's assume O'Neill is gone, but you still got, we got Roman Anthony coming up, and he'll take a spot. Christian Campbell has kind of played both infield and outfield. And then you look at that middle infield as well. Trevor Story is coming back, paying him 30-ish million a year. You got Marcel Meyer up next year. You know, you still got Sadan Rafaela. I think the two that I'm questioning, like, where do they end up? Do they get traded, or what is Rafaela and Abreu? But looking at the profile, Abreu's been hitting the ball well. 51% hard hit rate, 12% barrel, EV right under 92 miles an hour. Carry's a little high percent, but not terrible. Contact skills are a bit below average, similar to Kowser in that sense. But you look at this profile, and outside of maybe a little bit of a lower K rate, this profile actually is pretty similar. A lot of these metrics are pretty close to what Colton Kowser is putting up. But Abreu doesn't get nearly as much love. He hasn't played as much this year, about 150 less plate appearances or something like that. But Abreu is only 1 year older at 25. I want to see where he ends up. Does he get traded? Is he still a full-time starter next year? Is he platoon? A lot of questions still remain to be answered. I'm a believer. He's been doing this for all year. Yeah, he's had some times where he's been on the IL, missed some time. Overall, it's been a pretty impressive rookie season from Willier Abreu.
I think so, too. He's been very impressive all year. When you said, like you said, when you've been on the field, at least. There are some struggles against left-handed pitching. It's a 5.11 OPS against lefties, which includes 31% strikeout rate. And then you flip to against right-handed batters, the 8.79 OPS. So does some serious damage against righties. Okay, so he's a platoon. You can say the same for Josh Lowe, who also struggles with lefties and has been valuable. You could say this for a lot of left-handed bats. And so if that's the knock on Willier Abreu is that he can't hit lefties, that's fine. I'll take however many plate appearances you get against righties, 450, 500 plate appearances. That's a really good player. And he's shown that this year, especially if you can shield him against the lefties where he does struggle. As you mentioned, 25 years old. He just turned 25 not long ago. Yeah, he's older for the rookie class, but can't argue with what he's done. And he's certainly been a pleasant surprise since he debuted last year. I think many thought, and including myself, thought that the performance in AAA was okay, like, you know, it was good, but this was, again, a 24-year-old last year in AAA putting up big numbers. And then he comes out and dominates in his major league debut and has continued to do so since. So how does he fit? I think that's a good question. I don't think that's possible for us to answer right now, but it's hard to argue against the bat. It's going to play somewhere, and I think you can count on that no matter where he is.
Yeah, I think, yeah, it really depends. If he stays in Boston, maybe he is a platoon guy. But if he gets traded to a team, I'll just use the White Sox as an example, a worser team that maybe will still play him full-time just because they don't have any other options to really use consistently. You know, he could, you know, 20, 25 home runs, close to double-digit steals. Again, this could be somewhat, and I value Kowser more. I think Kowser's better, but talent-wise, I don't think it's a massive gap between Colton Kowser and Willier Abreu, and the metrics really back that up. So, yeah, I think Abreu could be sneaky good, and we'll see where he ends up next year. If he's still in Boston, is he starting full-time? We'll see. Again, still got a lot of questions to be answered, but definitely a decent little profile there with Abreu. All right, let's shift over to some recently debuted pitchers. We really got three that have debuted within the last 2 weeks, and the one was a little further back, but four debuts here over the last month or 6 weeks or so. Let's start with Jairo Iriarte. Came out of the bullpen the other day, pitched an inning, allowed a run, got his first major league strikeout. Iriarte's been another pitcher that's been up and down a lot, both in the San Diego system and with the White Sox. One of those guys where it's good stuff, but is the command there? is the strike throwing there enough to be a guy that's a full-time starter long-term? And obviously, being with the White Sox now, of a chance to do so, even though they're using him out of the bullpen right now. Maybe they go back down to AAA with him, start next year. Overall this year, 126 innings with AA Birmingham in the Southern League, 3.71 ERA, 128 whip. K rate dropped from last year. He's 122 Ks in 126 innings and a walk rate around 11%. You know, very indecisive prospect. I've seen him really high on rankings and really low on others. Where do you fall on Jairo Ariarte, Chris? You think he's a starter long-term? What are your thoughts?
Yeah, he's an interesting one. I really like the stuff. He gets some insane east-to-west movement. Just fastball runs, the slider goes the opposite way. Like, it's a really fun arsenal.
Yep.
With Ariarte, for sure. Yeah, it's interesting to me that he actually threw strikes at a league average clip this year. You know, the walk rate doesn't necessarily reflect that. And he's had those moments where it's like, oh man, like all hope seems lost when he's out there just walking everybody. And I do think that aspect can be concerning, that there's those inconsistencies. But again, it's a young pitcher who has talent. I'll tell you, the interesting thing for me this year was the bat missing. It really ticked down. And he started missing less and less bats. So that was the concerning aspect for me is, well, if he's not missing bats, then the command really has to be spectacular. And that really hasn't been the case. Sure, he struck out 122, but in 126 minor league innings, that's not great. The swinging strike rate's not great. I am, like I said, encouraged by the walk rates being, or the strike rate being better, and the walk rate hovering north of 10%. It's a little higher than you want to see. But I don't know. I'm in a split camp where I think that it's possible that he is a starter. It's really good stuff. It's a really good athlete on the mound. It's just going to have to be improved locations of his pitches, I think, to really play up. So we'll see how it all plays out. And it's interesting. I'm not shocked that they brought him up, just given their situation. It's like, right, why not? But I don't know. I'm split camp where he's covered near my top 100, probably a little lower, like top 150 type prospect. Is there the upside? Absolutely. But is there also the downside? Yeah. But he could fit into a bullpen role and be really good. So I'll be curious how this shakes out. I do think the White Sox continue to give him run as a starter, at least for a little while, just to see where it goes. And I think good for them to bring him up at the end of this year, since this, yeah, they've won 5 games since the All-Star break. But aside the point, give the guys a shot to play and see what happens.
Hey, they did beat the Baltimore Orioles. Was it 8-1 yesterday?
They did.
Or eight? Was it 8-0? I can't remember if it was a shutout or not. I remember they scored 8. I remember seeing the score pop up, and I'm like, wait a minute. No, that's backwards. But, oh, yeah, they did get the win yesterday on Wednesday. But, yeah, I think at least in the short term, they will. Maybe not this year, but maybe they give him a shot out of spring training next year. Later on in 2025, 2026, when they start getting some of their pitching prospects up and Thorpe back from injury, Schultz, Hagen Smith, maybe he gets pushed out at that point. I think he'll at least get some run to at least show, or one way or the other, okay, hey, I could be a starter, or maybe I'm more of a better of a bullpen guy. I mean, I have him 133 right now, so I'm somewhere range to you. And he's found, I think he might have, I have to go back and look previous months, but he might have stuck into my top 100 1 month, but it would have been like barely in the 97, 98 range. But he's pretty much been on that 100 to 140 range for me for better part of a year now. But yes, want to see him limit that walk rate a bit better, get that K rate back to where it was. Like, that was when he was really intriguing last year when he was striking out a bit more guys, as he had 6 more strikeouts last year in 36 less innings. So K-Rate's definitely gone south this year by a good margin. He's always been a little bit of a higher walk rate guy, but maybe can he get into that Kyle Harrison, Hayden Birdsong range, where top 75 pitcher, a bit of a higher whip and higher walk rate, one of those types of guys? Yeah, I think that's definitely possible. We'll see. With Ariarte, next one here, we got Caden Dano, who came up recently for the Los Angeles Angels, also from AA, which is not surprising, skipping him over AAA. Now, made his first start pretty solid, did walk 4, but only allowed 2 earned runs over 6 innings. This after posting a 252 ERA and a 0.94 whip in 135 and two-thirds innings with the Rocket City Trash Pandas, the team that's won our minor league name bracket each of the last 2 years by a country mile. But I think there's definitely a bit more intrigue here with Caden Dana, and bat missing has always been there with him. Much better command and control than Ariarte has as well. So only 20 years old too. He won't be 21 until December. He'll play all of next year at 21. We'll see if, you know, that he sticks in the rotation next year, or if they give him a little more time in the minor leagues. Wait to see how that plays out. Dan is a back end top 100 guy for me. I know he's a bit higher for other people. Maybe I'm a little bit lower on him, but I see a pretty solid like number three starter. I don't think he's a number two or anything like that, but definitely a lot to like overall here with Dana.
Yeah, and it's not an overpowering arsenal by any means. The results have been good, but also the Southern League was a pitcher's paradise this year. So it's something important to remember when looking at Caden Dana, which, again, no knock on him. I think he's a great arm. I've got him top 80-ish in my prospect rankings. The Angels thought enough of him to call him up at 20 years old in 8 months. Like, very young for a pitcher. And he performed. He pitched well in his first start in the majors, and he's been good all year. It's your prototypical starter's build. It's 6'4". He's athletic. He's got the flow going. Like, he just looks the part. And it's a good arsenal. Like I said, it's not like overpowering or anything. The fastball, it's fine. I think the fastball location matters the most because it's not a standout pitch. But the slider is really good. The slider is an easy plus pitch. And I really think the biggest question mark is, can he throw the curve and change up effectively enough to, you know, be a really good starter? Because if he has four good pitches, then okay, like, I really like this profile. But right now, it's like the slider's dominant. The fastball is good. And you want to see a little more from the curve and changeup. He did mix in some cutters, which is interesting, according to Savant, in his first major league start. But at the end of the day, like, I want to see the progression of this changeup and curve. He's 20 years old, so it's likely to happen. I'm not going to rule that out. But yeah, I think that Dana's a talented starter. And to see him progress all the way to the majors this year, I think is extremely impressive. I think it's fair to, you know, label him like a mid-rotation starter. I think it's like a SP4, SP3 at peak, which is really good. I think people hear that and freak out because, oh, why is he not an ace? But there's very few prospects. Like, I would say there's one pitching prospect in the minors right now that I think has ace upside, and that's Andrew Painter. That's it. He's the only one. So I think it's really hard to label prospects that highly. So I'd say SP4, SP3 is pretty good projection here.
Yeah, I would say Painter. I would personally say Job as well, and I'd maybe give an outside chance at Noah Schultz, but I'm not overly confident with that right now, even though he's my SP3. But yeah, I think that term gets thrown on too much. And also, like you mentioned, people get really mad at the I get it's not a sexy term, mid-rotation starter. I get it. It's not sexy whatsoever. But that's still a pretty – look at all the mid-rotation arms out there. That's a pretty good major league starter still, and that's still like a top 60 or so fantasy arm. So Dana has that upside for sure. He might be the best arm in this. There's no guys that really stand out in this Angels rotation. Tyler Anderson's one of the luckiest pitchers on the planet by far. Reed Detmers is inconsistent, more down than up. Griffin Canning, same thing. Jack Kochanowicz, Samuel Aldegary, who knows with those two. So, yeah, definitely we'll have a shot here. Hopefully they keep him up. He's still up as of now. Looks like he's getting the start on Sunday in the last game of that Texas series down there in Arlington. Looks like they're going with a six-man right now with all those other names I just mentioned. So, yeah, looks like he should get at least maybe two, three, four more starts here before the end of the season. And next name on the list here, this is the one that's been up a little bit longer here. And that's David Festa, who had a absolutely terrible first two outings, but has been pretty good over his last eight. Now, you look at those first two outings combined for 10 innings, gave up 12 runs. That was 5 earned and 5 against Arizona, and then 7 earned and 5 against Detroit. but in his last seven outings, he hasn't given up more than three earned runs in any start, coming off back-to-back starts with at least seven strikeouts, only one walk, and two earned runs or less. So his ERA is just a little bit over three over the last eight outings here. It's at 313 with a – where's the whip at? The whip is 1.08, and then he's got 50 strikeouts to 12 walks, 201 batting average against, 295 FIP. So pretty damn good here. And I tweeted it, I forget when it was, a couple of days ago at this point, for a rookie, just starters with at least 40 innings, he's second in strikeout minus walk rate. No, so he's got a K minus walk rate right around 24%. Walk rate is at 5.2%. K rate's a little under 30%. So overall, pretty damn good here with Vesta. I think similar SP3 range long term, but I think there's a little bit more upside than with Dana. I like Vesta a little bit more here. Where do you land on that? Who do you like more, Vesta or Dana long term?
Yeah, I think I prefer Vesta ever so slightly, but he's been good. And I think the Arsenal I like a little better, starting with the fastball. I think the fastball, solid offering. It's a good slide. The slider's at least on par with Dana's, and he's got a good feel for the changeup too. I look at what he's done this year, and I'm pretty pleased with the progression and how he's continued to pitch and get better. Yeah, those first two starts were pretty ugly, and people were writing him off really quickly, like, it wasn't going to work. He was no good. And he went down and he came back. And as you mentioned, it's a 3.13 ERA since he came back in 37 innings, 2.95 FIP and a 2.98 XFIP. Festo's pitched super well and he's striking guys out. 50 strikeouts over those 37 innings. That's pretty impressive. And it's 12 walks. That's fine. 33% K, 8% walk. That'll play. Absolutely. And so I think that with Vesta, he's got the frame, he's got the arsenal, he's got solid command. So I look at this profile, and I do prefer it to Dana. Not by a ton, but I do think that he's proved himself at this point. He's older, he's more experienced, and I'm just a little more confident right now in who he is.
Yeah, I'm right there with you on that one. I love the frame, your big 6'6 frame, big fastball, as you mentioned. He's a little older. He'll be 25 before next season. But I say he's been one of the better rookie pitchers in baseball over the last 6 weeks or so after those first two starts. And sorry, I misspoke. The walk rate, 6.5% this year, not 5.2. I don't know what I was looking at with that 5.2, but still 6.5% walk rate, 29.1% K rate, even with those first two starts, that's including those. So yeah, that's a pretty solid 22.6 K minus walk rate for David Vesta here. Minnesota's been doing pretty well developing pitchers over the last couple of years. We'll see how they all fit into the long-term plan, but definitely think Vesta could be like a top 60-ish fantasy starter long-term. Next one here, we're going to Rhett Lauder with the Cincinnati Reds, who have just been really hit hard by injuries, you know, over the last, you know, few months or so, which is probably a big reason why Lauder is getting the call here. Lodolo, Abbott, Hunter Green, that's like everyone's hurt there. Lauder pitched four innings in his debut several days ago, two hits, one run, and four walks and six strikeouts. He went through a midseason lull where wasn't pitching too well over 3-4 weeks or so, but definitely ended his minor league season before the call-up, pitching very well. So maybe some of the best starts of his season were leading up to that promotion. And you look at, he had six shutout innings in his one start in AAA, and then look at the starts right before that, the last several starts in AA, seven innings, one earned, five innings, shutout, six innings, one earned, six shutout innings, five shutout innings, five innings, two runs. Then you get back to the rough patch in June and early part of July. But Lauder, one of the more advanced arms from that 2023 draft class, 35 innings in those six starts I just mentioned, 18 hits, two runs, seven walks, 34 strikeouts, 0.51 ERA, and a 1.54 batting average against. Where are you at on Rhett Lauder long term, Chris? I know the ballpark isn't ideal, but hey, he only has to be like their 3-4 in that same range with Abbott, ideally for them, Green and Lodolo heading that rotation. So doesn't have to, you know, the pressure of being a guy that's gone as one of the top guys in that rotation. So where are you at on Lauder long term?
Lauder stuff isn't super loud by any means, but it's really good across the board and it's really good command. And I think it starts with the changeup and slider both being solid pitches, and no shock that a Wake Forest arm has a good changeup. They all typically do, and Lauder's no exception. I think that his progression too this year was pretty impressive, and he really came on strong in the second half of the season. You look post All-Star break, and he proved that he was ready. He allowed 2 total earned runs post All-Star break before getting the call, which is crazy. Yeah, 2 earned runs in 35 innings. That's a 0.51 ERA. It's nuts. 34K over that span, 7 walks. So it's interesting because, you know, he had his moments where throughout the year where he did walk too many batters. Not consistently, because it was a 5.6% walk rate in AA, but there were some starts where it went haywire, and that was the case in his first pro start. Who cares though? Nerves, like, it's going to happen. I wouldn't expect Lauder to be a consistently high walk rate guy. He may live in the 7% range. And honestly, he may need to learn to throw out of the zone a little bit more because his command's so good, throws so many strikes. He is in that same Zebby Matthews mold where I want to see him throw out of the zone a little more, try to get hitters to chase. And in doing so, maybe we see the swing and strike rate go up. And then he's missing more bats and getting more strikeouts. So I think that could be the path to success is, okay, your command's really good. You need to just nibble on the edge a little bit more and be okay throwing some balls. So we'll see. I mean, I like Lauder a lot long term. I think he's a safe number 3 type starter that can give you plenty of innings, good ratios, and enough strikeouts. So I'm pretty excited that they already gave him the call, and he's staying up too. It wasn't just like a one-time thing. He seems primed to stay in Cincinnati for his career at this point.
You were saying that obviously Lauder doesn't have the loudest stuff in the world, but you're saying that his stuff could be louder than it is right now?
Hopefully.
That was too easy. I was on a T for me, but I like Lauder. I think he's a high floor arm. I think he's an arm that can survive Cincinnati. I like him more than Vesta, more than Dana, more than Iriarte, more than probably every other pitcher on this. We still got a few more to go before we end the show, but I like him the most out of all these pitchers we have today, not by a big margin or anything like that, but I think he's the safest. And the upside's probably in a similar range to the Festa and Dana, but I think he's a little bit of a safer and a little more polished arms. I will give him the nod over these other guys, but I think they all can be pretty solid arms. We got 4 more here. We get 1 more starter and then a few relievers, actually. But last starter here, DJ Hurz. Talk about an up and down season, Chris. It feels like Hurz either allowing 6 runs or he's throwing an absolute gem. Overall, 15 starts, 4.09 ERA, 1.27 WHIP. And he actually is 6th on the K-minus walk rate leaderboard for starters with at least 40 innings this year at a tick over 20%, 8.6% walk rate, 28.9% strikeout rate. xERA is actually 3.38. I mean, look at the Savant. There's a lot of red, a lot of blues. Pretty interesting profile here with DJ Hurz, former Cubs prospect here, now with the Nats. Where are you at on Hurz these days? Obviously, it's been a pretty up and down career for him so far, even in the minor leagues, showing those the high upside flashes, but the low kind of downside, so to speak, that he has as well.
I'm actually surprised that he's limited the walks how he has.
Oh, same here. Absolutely.
We saw him pitch in the AFL. I guess it was last year. The years run together at this point. Yeah. And I had not had high expectations just given the fact that he couldn't throw strikes, and the strike rate this year was terrible in AAA. And then he jumps to the majors and he's throwing strikes at a 65% clip. That's a product of the ABS system in AAA. I don't know, but again, it hasn't been just a AAA problem. this year for hers with command, the walk rate issues go back for quite some time. Like, we've seen him run walk rates 15% it for a consistent amount of time. But to see it under 10 is pretty impressive. And again, is it sustainable? Man, if you throw strikes at a 65% clip, absolutely it is. He's had a couple of big walk starts. He had one in early August, 4 walks and 2 2/3. He had one a couple weeks ago. I mean, it was 3 walks and 5 innings, but guess what? He allowed 1 hit and struck out 8, didn't allow a run. So he's limiting the damage extremely well. And again, I am a little bit surprised that Hurst made this jump and has been really good. But I'll tell you what, the Nationals have done something with left-handed arms. I don't know, Gore slumping is a recent thing. He's hit a wall inning-wise, but man, they've done some really good pitch dev, even going back to the minor leagues too. So I'm pretty excited about Hurst. The Washington Nationals pitch development, they are doing something.
Yeah, it's funny with Gore. I think long-term, I don't know if there's like a huge gap in terms of the value between DJ Hurst and Mackenzie Gore. I mean, both are talented lefties that at times their command can get away from them and cause a lot of inconsistencies start to start month to month. And I think they're both going to be pretty similar, give you that ERA around 4, above average K rate, but just maddening to roster week to week. But you know, usually I don't go after these guys. Like, I don't have any shares of DJ Hurst right now. Probably won't. I'll never say never. If the price is right, I'll go after anybody. But usually I don't go after a lot of these arms. I don't have any shares of Gore either, just for reference. But definitely some value here. Last few pitchers here, we're going out to the bullpen, starting with Ben Joyce with the Angels, who has the fastest fastball, or four-seam velocity, I should say, this year at 102.1 miles an hour, and just threw a pitch at 105.5 the other night. Now, he's been pitching very well overall, 31 appearances, 34 and two-thirds innings, 2.08 ERA, 115 whip. Not a big K rate, though. I think he's easily compared to Mason Miller, rookie throwing 1,000 miles an hour, but Miller has a lot better bat-missing stuff. I think the K rate might even be double. I think Miller's in the mid-40% range, and Joyce is at 23.2. Again, pretty pedestrian, especially for a guy that throws this hard. But looking at the arsenal, you know, the four-seamer, that is a decent whiff rate pitch. That's where he's got 26 of his 31 strikeouts, this year. Some all of them besides 7 on the four-seamer. Been a very good offering for him. That's got a 29.8% whiff rate. Then he goes sinker, got 35.3%. Four-seamer was at 45.7%. Sinker, obviously not usually a big whiff rate pitch, though he actually has a decent whiff rate for the sinker at 25%. Slider, 32% whiff rate, only uses that 15% of the time. And then changeup, it's actually his best whiff rate offering, but he's only thrown that 21 times, 4% of the time there. So gets a lot of ground balls, though, 59% ground ball rate. Probably got that. He's gotten some saves, got 4 saves this year. Probably sees more and more save opportunities in 2025. So a guy that could be one of the elite arms, but do you think that K rate gets up there? He doesn't go to the off speed as much as Mason Miller does. Miller has that phenomenal slider that he can get guys out with. Joyce is a little bit different mold. Gets a lot of ground balls, and then tries to blow that four seamer by you. So where do you Joyce long term? Think he could be one of those elite arms to get up there with the Millers and the Iglesiases of the world?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think this is the case in point that sometimes velo doesn't necessarily mean more whiffs. Yeah, of course, right. Naturally, it's harder to hit for whatever he is. He's averaging like 102?
Yeah, 102.1.
Stupid. Yeah, of course, it's hard. It's harder to hit that than 92, but I still think you have to be able to command it, and his body and the locations of the four seam aren't that great. Sinker locations haven't been all that great. And I think that's really the biggest point, is that if he's going to miss bats, then he's going to have to locate a little better. And maybe he does. Maybe he grows into that. And I will say the command, or the control at least, has improved. You look and the walk rates are, it's down below 10% in the majors, which is encouraging because he has struggled to throw strikes at points in his career, dating back to college at Tennessee. And do I think that Ben Joyce can develop into a high-end reliever? Yeah, absolutely. Do I think the strikeout rate rises from the 23% it is right now? I think so. But by how much? We'll see. Maybe he lives in the 25-26% range. I don't know. Regardless, he's getting results. Stuff is there. And I'll take a shot that he does K more and maybe eventually runs with this closer role and can be a guy that gets you a ton of saves and really good ratios.
Yeah, I don't think he'll ever get the Mason Miller range. Miller's at 42% right now. Obviously, that slider for Miller has a, where'd it go? 45.6% whiff rate, and even has a 38.5% whiff rate on the four-seamer. Mason Miller does. So, yeah, definitely a different type of arsenal. But he also throws 1.3 miles an hour faster on average than Miller with that four-seamer, which is insane because Miller's at 100.8, and he's still over a mile an hour slower than Ben Joyce. But, yeah, that's why I was never super high on Joyce as a prospect. Obviously, as a reliever, we don't obviously rank relievers too highly for fantasy-focused prospect rankings. And then the higher K rate, especially the higher walk rate, is another kind of thing that kept his ranking lower in my rankings. But, yep, I was wrong there, and he's turning into one of the better young relievers in the game and definitely one of the more exciting ones to watch. Last two names are both from the same team, so we will clump them together. A couple of sneaky good rookie seasons here from Porter Hodge and Ben Brown in 55 and a third innings. Brown's kind of split time between rotation and bullpen, but I think many expect him to be a bullpen arm long term. 55 and a third inning, excuse me, for Ben Brown. 3.58 ERA, 1.08 whip. Has a 28.8% strikeout rate, 8.6% walk rate. His issue, he allows way too much hard contact. 51.4% hard contact rate allowed and 11% barrel rate. On the other side, Porter Hodge in 32 appearances, 36 innings. 1.75 ERA, 0.89 whip. 10.9% walk rate and a 32.8% strikeout rate. And the Cubs are looking for that next guy. Porter Hodge right now has gotten some save opportunities of late. They got Tyson Miller and they got Nate Pearson there now. So they don't, but who's the guy for them going forward? Is it one of these two? Hodge are, I did again, Porter Hodge. Before we started recording, I called him Hoarder Podge. I've now called him Podge twice, which is even funnier.
Phenomenal.
But Porter Hodge already getting some opportunities in the ninth. Got the save back on 8/31. And maybe Ben Brown does as well. Brown has one of my favorite. Yeah, that curveball from Ben Brown is absolutely phenomenal. One of my favorite curveballs in the game. So, Chris, how do you value these guys? And do you think one or both can really factor in long-term to the save mix there in Chicago or be good options in save hold leagues?
Yeah, I think many want Ben Brown to be a starter, and he was good in a starter's role this year, but I think that what he's dealing with right now, it's injuries is the biggest reason that he may not be able to be a starter long-term. It's been a consistent thing throughout his career, just injuries piling up. And you look at the arsenal, and it's certainly the arsenal usage of a reliever. It's 63% four seam and then the curve. And curveball is a really good pitch. I really like the pitch. I think the four seamer is solid too. So I think Brown certainly could be a really good reliever. And I hate to write him off as a starter completely. I'm not doing that. But I do think that the consistent injury history, the lack of being able to throw innings in a season does give you some pause and concern. With Porter Hodge, he's been really good. And the fact that they already trust him in that closer role, I think is pretty huge. When a rookie is allowed that opportunity, I think it's pretty telling. He's got the stuff for it. He's pretty deadly in missing bats. He's got a good arsenal. And I don't care about the walk. Like, the walk rate's in a range where it's fine. I'm not worried about it at all. And so I think that he can certainly keep this role for the long term. The sweeper, missing bats at a 50% clip, which is wild. Fastball, been a really good offering. Sitting 95-96 range, that'll absolutely play. So, I think that Porter Hodges might be here to stay in the back of this bullpen, but it'd be fun to see Ben Brown back there as well, because he's got the stuff for sure, and that could be a deadly back in his bullpen in Chicago for a long time.
Yeah, it's been a pretty rough year for the Cubs in that bullpen. They've cycled through, I feel like it's five or six guys at this point. Everyone that they hoped would work out didn't. It was Albert Alzale, Julian Merriweather, you know, the list goes on and on. Guys just have not worked out in that closer role this year. So, yeah, Hodge getting the shot now. We'll see how long that continues and see where Ben Brown ends up. I think he'd be better as a bullpen arm. I think that fastball curveball combination could be really good in the late innings, and it has been at times before he got hurt. And like you mentioned, the durability concerns definitely also swing me over to having him be more of a reliever long term than a starter. But that's going to close out the show. Thanks to everyone for tuning in again this episode. Hope you enjoyed it. We will be back with you again on Monday. But until then, everyone take care.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting six crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus four biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.